This is KTOO-FM. Juno Afternoon is next. We'll talk with Mary Alice McKean and Pam Finley about Holy Trinity Church's spectacular happening this Sunday. Divas Leslie Wood and Mary Graham will be here to preview Saturday's Who's Your Diva event. We'll discuss Rosh Hashanah with Rabbi Jessica Zimmerman. Sonny Blackwell will be here to highlight the upcoming March of Dimes Jail and Bail event. That Writer's Almanac, Music and More, that's next on KTOO-FM. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Some Native Americans are stepping up fundraising efforts to protest controversial mining and pipeline projects. Wisconsin Public Radio's Chuck Kornbach has more.
One fundraiser was held this week near long-ago tribal lands in the Apostle Islands in Wisconsin. A drum circle provided some of the music. The money raised will go to the Native-led environmental justice organization Honor the Earth. Group director Winona LeDuc is from the White Earth Nation in Minnesota. She says Honor the Earth is helping some of the efforts against the proposed GTAC iron ore mine in northern Wisconsin. LeDuc urged the crowd to remain strong.
Hang around longer than GTAC. How about that? We hang around longer than the mining companies. Let's let them go bankrupt while we're still here, okay?
LeDuc acknowledges the mining industry and pro-business groups usually have very deep pockets.
They got a lot more money than we do. You know, what we got going for us is, first of all, we're on the right side. You know, and we're really resilient. These mining companies, a lot of them have been around 20 years, 50 years. A few of them have been around a few more years than that, but Anishinaabe people, we've been around 10,000.
LeDuc, accompanied by recording artists, the Indigo Girls, plans more fundraising concerts this weekend. The concerts come as the Wisconsin legislature debates a new bill aimed at blocking protests at the site of the proposed iron ore mine near the Bad River Reservation. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
In Canada, the president of the Nepean Redskins Youth Football Club says the team's name is not offensive, according to the CBC. Steve Dean told the news agency that the club has permission from the Ottawa Aboriginal Coalition to use the name. Dean was responding to questions surrounding a discrimination complaint filed by an Ojibwe man. Ian Compo, a member of the DJ group, A Tribe Called Red, is asking the Human Rights Tribunal to take action. Compo is seeking to change the name and logo, which includes a cartoon depiction of a Native man. He's also asking for a policy to be drafted on the use of Indigenous identity and imagery in sports. In a press release sent out Tuesday, Compo says the name is racially offensive and says he's taking steps to change the name on behalf of his 5-year-old daughter so she won't have to face discrimination. The Assembly of First Nations and the Native Women's Association of Canada are supporting the effort. An Oklahoma tribe has received a grant from the National Park Service to help with repatriation efforts. KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports.
The Chickasaw Nation is getting a grant of more than $7,000 to support efforts to return ancestral human remains and cultural objects to the tribe. The money is part of more than $65,000 the National Park Service awarded to various tribes, museums, and groups across the nation under the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act. A news release from Park Service Director Jonathan B. Jarvis says the Protection and Repatriation Act helps correct mistreatment of Native peoples by returning the remains of their ancestors and sacred objects. He says the grants will further the process of returning more than 10,000 Native American remains and 1 million sacred objects to tribes and Native Hawaiian organizations. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney in Oklahoma City.
The Running Strong for American Indian Youth organization has provided 8,000 backpacks to Native youth across the country. National spokesperson Billy Mills says the backpacks full of school supplies send a message to youth that their future is cared about. The backpacks were donated to school districts, tribal services, youth groups, and community clubs that serve tribal communities. During this month in 2012, the remains of Albert Afraid of Hawk were returned to South Dakota, and a burial was held on the Pine Ridge Reservation. The Lakota man traveled with Buffalo Bill's Wild West Show in 1900. Afraid of Hawk died of food poisoning in Connecticut, and his remains were in an unmarked grave until records were discovered in 2008. The repatriation process began in 2009 after his ancestors were located. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to a Juneau Afternoon, a rainy, windy Wednesday. I'm Lori Scandling, and our producer today is Jeff Brown. Glad to have you with us. We have four segments this afternoon, as usual, and our first set of guests include Mary Alice McKean and Pam Finley, and they are here to talk about Holy Trinity Church's spectacular happening, which happens on this Sunday. And we might remind the audience that that church, which was 100 years old, completely burned down on March 12th, and I happen to remember this because it was my birthday, and I went into town to have brunch, and I said to my husband, what is all that black, flaky stuff in the air? And it was the remains of the fire floating around downtown. It was a very severe and tragic situation, and I don't remember what year that was.
2006.
So that was 7 years ago, and since then, the community, both of Holy Trinity and of Juneau, pulled together to rebuild the church and, as important, a community space, and that's what we're here to talk about today. So first, tell us about the event, and then what is its purpose?
Well, the purpose of it is really essentially to support McPheeters Hall. The overhead is paid in part by the church and in part by rentals. We want to keep the rental low so that more people can use it more often, and one way to do that is just to have a fundraiser, from like once a year. It's very nice. A lot of the people, well, everybody, all the performers are donating their time. And there are many, most of them have used McPheeters Hall one time or another, or sung in the sanctuary, which is also happening.
Why don't you describe what McPheeters Hall is and who McPheeters was, well, in case there are folks here who don't have that history.
Yeah, actually, it was named after Father McPheeters, who died in the late 50s, soon after the church hall was created. This was back in the late 50s. There wasn't much of a community space downtown at all. So the then existing church built on to the church McPheeters Hall, which was used for just about everything, including, especially towards the last couple decades, it was especially used for arts things and theater. And then when the church burned in 2006, we thought, well, this was never a great theater space. So when we rebuilt it, it's still multiple-purpose use, of course, but we put a stage and we put theater lights in. And it's been used for performances since.
I think Theater in the Rough uses it as its home.
Yes, it's Theater in the Rough's home, but other people have used it. One of the groups that's performing, Morally Impoverished, is an improv group, local improv group, that held a big week-long improvisational festival last spring, and they had people from all over the country, and so they're doing a set for this, as well as we have both singers and spoken word performers.
Mary Ellis, who else will be performing?
Well, we are having two simultaneous shows done twice. Now, that is not immediately understandable, so what that means is you go and you pick either to see the upstairs or the downstairs, and in the upstairs will be music. And we have some fabulous singers, Dan and Kathleen Wayne, Patricia Hull, Cheryl and Brett Crawford, an ensemble of the Juneau Pride Chorus, Scarlett Adam, and a piano player, Natalia Spengler, who's a young, brilliant piano player in town. And Dan Wayne is the producer, and he asked the performers to just sing a song they love. Just pick something they loved and sing it. And so there's a Rodgers and Hammerstein tune, there's opera, there's a Beatles song. They're just these fabulous performers singing what they love. And then downstairs is going to be the spoken word. And there's going to be storytelling, poetry, and improv. So there's going to be some mudroom performers. Mark Wheeler is going to MC that. There's going to be Christy Name Erickson, who's going to do some poetry. And there's going to be improv. So you go to one show up top.
And you flip-flop.
Right, and then you flip-flop. And in the middle, you look at fabulous dessert auctions and fabulous art item auctions. And you get to see our beautiful new church.
It is a lovely space. I'll tell you, I'm just helpless at dessert auctions. Really.
Good.
My dad always said, your eyes are bigger than your stomach. And as long as they weren't bigger than my checkbook, I would buy things. So that sounds very fun. Now, the doors open at 6:30 at 4th and Gold, which is where the church and the community hall are. And the performances, do they begin at 7 and there's a flip-flop at 8? Or
yeah, they begin at 7.
Plan on? Okay.
And they're going to be about 45 minutes, maybe to an hour, and then there'll be an intermission, bid on items or bid beforehand, and then there'll be the second show.
What is the cost to attend, or are you just seeking donations? This is a fundraiser, after all.
It is. It's $25 and children for half price.
Okay. And at the spoken word, I'm interested in, it sounded like there were three or four performers, but some of that is poetry. Is that correct?
Yeah. Christy Name Erickson, who also performs under Wishkanaidi.
Wishkanaidi, okay.
Yes. We'll be doing poetry.
Whose brainchild was this?
Actually, we did this last year. This is the second annual. And last year downstairs was Theater in the Rough did a bit. I think it's a kind of collective brainchild. We just thought it would be, it's fun. Fundraisers really need to be fun. If it's about the money, you don't want to do it because you don't make that much money, really. But you can have a lot of fun doing it. So, Mary Alice, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think it was Aaron Elmore's idea last year. And we'd like as much getting people in the space to looking at McFeeters Hall, looking at the sanctuary. I heard a singer in town say he thinks it's the best space acoustically to sing. So the sanctuary has beautiful, beautiful sound. And then we also will open up the Mustard Seed, which is the resale shop in the lower level of Holy Trinity. And that has gorgeous little items. So it's really nice to see people swarming around the space and just seeing what's there.
And is it appropriate for all ages?
Yes. I think it's, well, I'm morally impoverished. Goodness knows what they'll do. But
it is improv.
It is improv, so you never know.
Yeah.
But I think in general it would be if the children like to watch either theater or they like to listen to music, they should definitely come. It'll be, each set, as Mary Alice says, about 45, 50 minutes.
Okay.
So they won't have to sit too long. And I have a list of some of the things. In addition to the dessert auctions, there are some other art and antiques that have been donated. If people would be interested in those, there's a Riminos, a Dale DeArmond, L. Cedric Jansen, a silver cruet set from the 1800s, a Greek pottery set, crystal cut glass, Steuben buffalo pottery from 1909, Wedgwood bowls, Limoges soup bowls. So if you're interested in any of those things, you might
want to come too.
Lovely selection.
Yeah. Where could someone look for more information? Can they look online? Is there a telephone number where they could get additional
you can get,
details?
You can get the tickets if you go to the JAHC.org, the Junior Arts and Humanities Council.
Sure.
The general ticket place where you click on tickets, and eventually you get tickets. You get to a page that has tickets for all kinds of things. Including
we have a Facebook event page, if you just say spectacular. And you can also call Holy Trinity and
586-3532.
Very good.
In the afternoons. Allison is there if you have questions.
Very good. Well, I think we've covered it.
I think we have. And I just want to put on one more sort of plug. It is a benefit for McFeeters Hall. McFeeters Hall is a much-loved and much-used community space, and it's used about 80 to 90% for the community and a very small portion of it for church events. So we really rebuilt it because part of our identity as a congregation is that we offer this space to the community. So this is a way, as Pam said, to keep rates down and just expose the space to the community. So we hope you all come and take a look.
Yeah, and it's 7 to 9 on Sunday, because it's Sunday night. We wanted to kind of have an end date, so you get to go home and go to bed.
Well, thank you so much. We've been talking with Mary Alice McKean and Pam Finley about an event at Holy Trinity Church in McPheeters Hall this Sunday from 7 to 9. It's a spectacular happening with primarily singing upstairs and performances downstairs, and you get a chance to do both with a break in between to spend some money on antique and other items as well as desserts. You can find those tickets at jahc.org. And if you need more information, you can call 586-3532. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 4th of September, 2013. Google was first incorporated on this day, 1998, founded by Larry Page and Sergey Brin, two PhD students at Stanford, who designed a new and more powerful search engine. June 2006, Google was added to the Oxford English Dictionary as a verb. I Google you, and you Google me. 1888, Rochester, New York, George Eastman got his patent for his new easy-to-use camera, the Kodak. He came up with the name simply because it was easy to remember. You push the button, we do the rest, said the early ads for the Kodak. It's the birthday of the novelist Mary Renault, born London, 1905, settled in South Africa, where she began to write her series of historical novels set in ancient Greece, The Last of the Wine, The King Must Die, and The Bull from the Sea. Mary Renault, who wrote, "Madness is sacred to the gods, they give it us at the proper season to purge our souls, as they give us strong herbs to clean out our bodies." And it's the birthday of Richard Wright, born on a plantation near Natchez, Mississippi, 1908, author of Native Son in 1940. Grew up in the Jim Crow South, he was the son of a sharecropper. Father abandoned the family when the boy was 5 years old, moved to Memphis with his mother, taught himself to read by secretly getting books out of the whites-only library. 19, moved to Chicago, city where blacks and whites sat on streetcars next to each other, ate at the same restaurants, which confused him. He didn't know how to act anymore. Worked as a ditch digger, hospital worker, postal clerk, and then came out with his masterpiece, Native Son, 1940, the story of Bigger Thomas, who gets a job as a driver for a beautiful young white woman and then accidentally kills her. It went on to become the first best-selling novel by an African-American writer. Here's a poem for today by David Budbill, the ubiquitous daylily of July. There is an orange daylily that blooms in July and is everywhere around these parts right now, common, ordinary. It grows in everybody's dooryard, abandoned or lived in, along the side of the road, in front of stone walls, at gas stations and garages, at the entrance to driveways, anywhere it takes a mind to sprout. You always see them in clusters, bunches, never by themselves. They propagate by rhizomes, which is why they are so resilient and why you see them in bunches. There is an orange daylily that blooms in July and is ubiquitous right now. The roadside mowers mow a lot of them, but they don't get them all. These are not the rare and delicate lemon-yellow daylilies or the other kinds people have around their places. This one is coarse and ordinary, almost harsh in its weathered beauty, like an older woman with a tough, worldly wise and wrinkled face. There's nothing nubile, smooth, or perky about this flower. It's not fresh. It's been around a while, and everybody knows it. As I said, it's coarse and ordinary, and it's beautiful because it's ordinary. A plant gone wild and therefore become rugged, indestructible, indomitable, in short, tough, resilient, like anyone or thing has to be in order to survive. A poem by David Budbill, The Ubiquitous Day Lily of July, used by permission of the poet here on the Writer's Almanac, sponsored by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. We have Frances Leach from the Juno Lyric Opera with us, and two of the nine divas who will be performing on Saturday night during the third annual Who's Your Diva event. So, Frances, what is this, and whose idea is it, and what is the purpose of Who's Your Diva?
Well, the purpose is a fundraiser for Juno Lyric Opera. This is our third year doing it. I used to be the executive director for Juno Lyric Opera, and we needed a new fundraiser. And I knew that First City Players down in Ketchikan, where I'm from, was doing an excellent fundraiser. They simply call it Divas. And I called them up, and I talked to their executive director, who I know, and I said, hey, can we take this event from you and steal it? And she said, absolutely, we stole it from someone else. So we did, and we put our own twist on it. And it was a hard convince for the board at first. They were, you know, kind of apprehensive, this whole idea of getting these divas and people voting for them and making our money that way. But after the first year and they saw how successful it was, they got right behind it.
So how does it work? How does a diva get selected to be a diva? Is there a audition type competition?
There's actually a committee that Juno Lyric Opera forms, usually of board members and the producer and the executive director. And we sit around and we come up with a list of individuals who are known singers in Juno. Sometimes we don't know any of them. Sometimes somebody will suggest a singer to us and we'll all say, do any of you know this person? And we'll kind of ask around to find out. And so we come up with this list, and it's ever-changing. We are to the point where we're inviting divas back to come sing again, and a lot of them are very excited about that. So it's there's no audition process. We take suggestions, and then we do our research, and our whole idea is to have fun. It's a great fundraiser.
How does the competition work? Are people voting by texting a certain hashtag? Are they calling the 1-800 number? Are they throwing confetti and you just...
Yeah,
or
a little
bit
of all. Or is it the
applause-o-meter?
Absolutely. It's a little bit of all that. No, basically, we have set up online donations through the Juno Arts and Humanities Council through their Vendini. So you can go to our website, junoopera.org, and click on the diva and vote for them. It's $1 a vote. And all the money goes towards Juno Lyric Opera and their activities that they put on throughout the year. Or people can give donations directly to the diva, and then they turn it into Juno Lyric Opera. So that's the pre-fundraising. The next part is at the actual event. People will see these beautiful and talented ladies up on stage and say, I want to vote for them. And so they can give their credit card number, check, cash, however they want to do it, and we are happy to take it. And at the end of the evening, she who raises the most money, also known as collecting the most votes, is crowned the diva.
Can you be a guy and be a diva?
So far, no. However, I have a feeling that we will be moving into the Devo spectrum next year.
So that's the male is the Devo?
Yes, yes. And actually, Ketchikan's been doing that in the past years and having a lot of success. So I have a feeling that in the next coming year or so, we will be inviting some Devos to perform.
Have a co-ed event. Well, we have two of this year's Divas with us, Mary Graham and Leslie Wood. And I was asking them a little bit before the show, so did you have to audition? And we know the answer is no. So, Mary, tell us, how did you find out about this and what was your reaction?
Well, I had attended last year's performance and had a really good time. Actually, I think I might have volunteered and had a really good time, too, because it takes a lot of people to put it on. And you get a phone call from Frances, and she says, your name came up. You know, do you want to be a diva? And as long as it worked into my schedule, I graciously said, yes, I would. It's the most out there event I've ever personally done singing in Juno. I've sung in Juno for over 25 years, but so I do have name recognition, I believe, but this is putting your whole self out there, and it's been a lot of fun. The women that I'm working with are a lot of fun to be with, so I'm really looking forward to Saturday night.
So I see Leslie shaking her head, nodding her head up and down when Mary said this is one of the most out there events. How would you describe that then, Leslie, if it's out there? Why are you going, mm-hmm, yeah, it is.
Well, for me, it's sort of a culmination of all the performing I've done in my life. I've been a performer my whole life, and in Juno, I haven't really gotten involved with theater very much, but I've been involved with the music, and most of you all know that I'm the director of the Juno Pride Chorus, and so when I'm up on the podium, I'm representing or, you know, on behalf of the whole chorus, and it's not just me, you know, and so this time it's just me, and I get to do a little bit of theater, a little bit of dancing, a lot of singing, and add my own personal flair to things, and so that's why I feel like it's really out there for me too, and you know, a personal thing. But also, I get to be a character on stage that I don't normally get to be in my normal life. So it's been really fun to
prepare
for this.
Are you nervous at all being the single performer as opposed to a leader of a pride chorus?
Well, I'm not nervous yet, but I'm sure I will be.
There's still time for that.
Right. Yeah. I know I'm going to have jitters before I go on stage. I always do. But this, you know, I hope, like Frances said, it's all about having fun. And so that's going to be my focus, and we're just going to have fun.
Mary, how do you pick what it is you're going to do, sing, or perform? Is that suggested to you by the Lyric Opera, or does each performer get to choose what she would like to do?
Each performer gets to, you get to do two numbers. One is accompanied by piano, so kind of a maybe more mellow, but not necessarily. You can have some pretty raucous piano songs. And then our second song, we're accompanied by a band, which is a total first for me. I've never been the singer with a band behind me. So when you go to pick out your songs, you got to think about, you know, what your accompaniment's going to be. You can have backup singers. I have a backup singer on one of my songs. And you can have other musicians besides the band. I have a fiddle player on one of my songs. And actually what happened is I focused a lot on choral music in the last few years in Juno. So I started whipping out my CDs and listening to different things that I know I've liked in the past, and that's really where I got my inspiration for my songs.
Now, Mary, you said I've been working with a lot of fun women. It's been great. Have practices already begun with the other divas who are competing, or is this more of an individual pursuit where you don't want to give away anything to your other competitors?
Well, there may be a little of that you don't want to give away, but we do an opening number all together, and we've had a rehearsal with that. I've actually performed and worked with four of the other divas that are in this group of people, so I've worked with them in other musical endeavors in Juno, so that's another part of being familiar with some of the other women that I'm singing with, and just even those small times that we've been together, I just get the sense that we're going to have a really good time. And then when you're rehearsing, you might cross over when you go to your band rehearsal, the person before you is, you know, still rehearsing, so you get some interaction that way too.
So, Leslie, how are you trolling for votes right now? Have you expanded your friend list on Facebook, or can you reveal some of your methodology? Folks back home all getting notes in email from Leslie now, hey, vote for me every day.
Yes, I've been sending emails and Facebook reminders, but really, you know, I've just been asking people in person when I see them, and I've been really touched by the people who have voted for me on Vendini, because we get a list every week. So it's been really great to see who's voting, and that's been exciting. I know that, you know, some of the divas have been going all out raising money, and one person's been going door to door, and I just, you know, I don't have that kind of time or energy, but I've been, you know, putting myself out there a little bit and just, you know, letting people know, and hopefully they can vote for whoever, you know, they feel they want to. And some people who actually have a ticket, because people have heard that it sold out. But they're saying, well, we'll just wait till the end of the show to vote because we're going to wait to see who's, you know, who they want to vote for. They're not going to promise anything, you know, even though I said, please come. And so that'll be fun. And you know, the one who won last year, she gets to sing, her name is Cheryl Crawford, she gets to sing a goodbye song. And so during that goodbye song, and that's when they're going to tally all the final votes. And then
the tiara is passed on.
Yes, the tiara is passed on, and that's going to be an exciting moment.
Mm-hmm. Mary, any tricks of the trade for...
Well, Facebook's worked really good for me, and I had the same experience as Leslie, is we get this list every week to know where we're at, and it's like, oh, wow. Well, and I didn't even talk that much to my dad. I'm sure it was my sister, who he's in Wisconsin. Oh, my dad voted for me. But what also helped is Shauna O'Sullivan takes glamour pictures of us, and we were able to put those pictures up on our Facebook page, email them to people. And that's where I got a lot of attention, because I'm not a really girly girl all the time, but in this picture, I'm pretty much a girly girl. And people are like, oh, my God, Mary, we really love that picture of you. So my photo, I think, helped with the votes for me.
So glamour never goes out of style, apparently.
I guess not.
Well, Frances, let's go over the who, what, when, where, why one more time. The event is Who's Your Diva, and is it this Saturday night? Is that correct?
Correct. September 7th, this Saturday.
Okay. And what time and where?
7 p.m. at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, Leslie said that someone related they heard it was sold out.
It is sold out, actually. So if you're one of the lucky ticket holders, congratulations.
Okay.
This event has sold out every single year, at least 2 weeks in advance. That does not mean that you still can't participate. You can still vote online for your favorite diva, and we encourage that. And this is not just about crowning the diva. We like to relay that to our divas that it is about that, but we're also telling our audience and our supporters that this is a fundraiser for Juneau Lyric Opera. And a lot of people don't understand that, you know, when you put on events, not only your ticket sales don't always cover all the cost of the event. And so these fundraisers are absolutely essential to organizations like Juneau Lyric Opera to float them throughout the year.
And one more time, if someone wished to vote, what is the step to do that? What is the process?
You can just go on to our website, www.junoopera.org, and click on Who's Your Diva, and then it will open up the page for Who's Your Diva 2013. You'll see the lovely photographs by Shauna O'Sullivan.
They are sharp.
They are great. And Agape did the makeup and hair for our divas for this event, and so they look wonderful, and there's a little bio about the divas, and right underneath their bio it says donate or vote for them now.
Any chance that tickets might be available at the door if somebody doesn't show up? I know sometimes that can happen if people are dedicated about coming to something.
Mm-hmm. And I suggest that they call the opera at 586-ARIA. That's 586-ARIA.
Easy to remember.
Yes.
Well, thanks for joining us today. It was a lot of fun learning about Who's Your Diva. That Juneau Lyric Opera fundraising event is set for 7 p.m. this Saturday. There's a chance you can still get in, but call the Juneau Lyric Opera at 586-ARIA, A-R-I-A. And to vote for your diva, go to www.junoopera.org. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks. Do 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 do
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Laurie Scandling. With me is Rabbi Jessica Zimmerman, and we're going to talk about Rosh Hashanah, which is a holiday or a religious observance, if I understand it correctly, that began this week. Is that correct?
Yes, it begins tonight, actually, and goes through it 2 days, so tomorrow and also Friday, and it's the Jewish New Year. And in fact, it's the first day of the seventh month of the Jewish calendar, which you wouldn't think of as the Jewish New Year, but that's the way that the calendar was set up. So it's our celebration of the beginning of the year 5774. 5,774.
That's a long time.
It is a long time. It is a long time. It's counting back from the time of Adam and Eve until all of us being here now. So it's a long chain of history.
What types of events, commemorations, practices, traditions occur during Rosh Hashanah?
Well, tonight the Jewish community of Juneau and Southeast Alaska, people come from all over this area because we're the closest synagogue, actually the only one in Southeast Alaska. We'll begin with the lighting of holiday candles, and then we have a service, a prayer service, to welcome in the new year, and we'll end our service with a blessing over a cup of wine to sanctify the time, and then we'll join together in the eating of round chalot, braided breads with raisins in them for a sweet new year. The roundness of the bread, which we only eat at this time of year, represents the cycle of the year, the circle of a full year coming back now with the beginning of a new year. And the raisins, which we put in our bread at this time, are for sweetness. And we eat apples dipped in honey as well to represent sweetness and our wishes for a sweet and healthy and happy new year for our community and for our neighbors around us.
How big is the Juneau Jewish community or that in Southeast Alaska? I know that being able to achieve the opening of a synagogue here not that many years ago was significant. And I'm curious how many folks are involved in that community.
Well, my understanding is that there are about 40 households that are active members of the congregation, but there are a number of other Jewish folks who live in the Juneau area and the surrounding southeast cities and towns. So there are actually quite a few, probably a couple hundred Jewish folks in this area, I would say, and it is quite significant that the community here was able to open a synagogue. The community has been together, and they used to meet in a church here at Northern Lights Church, and about 5 years ago,
I think it's going on 8 or 9.
8 or 9 years ago, the community actually took possession of a building, bought a building here, and created a beautiful home with a space where everyone can gather, which is very significant because from Seattle to Anchorage, or maybe Vancouver, depending on which way you're looking, there really is only one synagogue in this area of Southeast Alaska. So it's very significant that this community has been able to sustain itself and keep it going and welcome visitors and celebrate all the Jewish holidays and the Sabbath every week and to educate and raise a generation of children here who have become bar and bat mitzvah, who have become adults in the community, and who are wonderful, learned members of the larger Jewish community.
Is Rosh Hashanah a holiday, or is it a religious observance, or both?
It's both. It's a holiday. It's the New Year holiday, and a religious observance as well. It's a day people usually take the day off tomorrow to observe spending time with family and friends and to observe the date on the calendar.
Of course, it's interesting. Our school district creates a winter break around Christmas and New Year's, but I don't think we have a break or a calendar that reflects other practices. I was just thinking about that. We don't call it a Christmas break anymore, but certainly it encompasses what most people would consider the Christmas break. Can kids take the day off from school? Is it recommended that they do that as part of the observance?
It's a great question. Yes, I mean, it's a time for the community to gather and for family members to gather. So a lot of families do choose to take kids out of school to make it a special day and a holiday, a time to be with the community together. Tomorrow in the afternoon, there's the traditional casting off of sins, or what represents that with the throwing of breadcrumbs into the river. So it's a whole celebration and a day to really give children a sense of what the community observance is like. But it is true what you mentioned. The Jewish community in the United States is about 2% of the population. So we are really quite small and used to being a minority in all the places where we live. And some communities are more aware of Jewish holidays than others with a larger Jewish population, but certainly it's something that we have gotten used to helping to educate other people, and we're so grateful for the opportunity to share information, like on a radio program like this, where we can let people know what's happening in our community and to share our celebration with our neighbors.
Our other guest today is Sherry Paul. And Sherry, talk a little bit about what it means to your family to celebrate the holiday with a larger community here and to have a synagogue in place. You've lived here a long time without that kind of support system, I would guess.
Well, I've always had the support system. You know, even when I came up in 84, I found the Jewish community right away, especially for the high holidays. And then when I lived in Fairbanks, the high holiday services was on the military base. So that was my first exposure to going to Fort Wainwright in Fairbanks. But you kind of always just find, you know, other Jewish members around, and it was pretty easy here. But having a synagogue and having two daughters and raising them with a Jewish education has been challenging because, well, I was raised Reform, and we had, you know, Sunday school. And actually, at our school district, actually celebrated that we did have Yom Kippur off. So the whole school district was off for the for Yom Kippur. So raising my daughters Jewish was very important to me. So we, my one daughter, Manan, we had a homegrown Sunday school. So the parents taught the kids. And that's what actually a majority of the community has had up until now with Rabbi Gartenberg, who is also lives here. And it's great. I'm letting, you know, I let my daughters choose whether they wanted to become bat mitzvah, and they've chosen that. And
what does that mean for those who do not understand the meaning of bar or bat mitzvah?
It's a coming of age. So at the age of 12 for a girl or 13 for a boy, it's traditionally the way we think of a Jewish child turning into a Jewish adult. So they take responsibility actually to learn the prayers and to lead the service for the first time. They're brought up to the Torah, to the Bible, the scroll, and they have a chance to read from that for the first time in front of the community. And symbolically, they then take on the responsibility to be leaders in the community. Of course, a 13-year-old nowadays is not the same adult that a 13-year-old would have been 5,000 years ago. So, you know, it's symbolic, but it really is a representation of a growing up. It's a growing up ceremony and a coming of age ritual.
So, Jessica, I heard Sherry say that we have a full-time rabbi in Juneau. Is that correct?
Well, he is a rabbi. He has been, we do not have a full-time rabbi.
He's
been very active with our congregation. We have him running a lot of what's called learner's minions. So about at least a half a dozen times a year, and sometimes monthly, it depends how busy we are, he leads Saturday morning study. And he is also doing our Sunday school now for the kids and helping. There's going to be three B'nai Mitzvahs this summer, three young girls that are going to be preparing for their bat mitzvah. So he's very active in keeping it going.
So Jessica, what is your role? Are you a rabbi here in Juneau, or do you serve the region, or what are what's your itinerary, as it were? It sounds like maybe you're not in Juneau all the time.
That's right. I'm actually a visiting rabbi. I had the privilege to be the student rabbi here while I was in school in 1999-2000. So my relationship with this Juneau Jewish community goes way back. And I came back 3 years ago to lead High Holiday Services again. And I was in Southeast Alaska in Sitka over the summer for the bat mitzvah of some friends there. And now I'm here. So I have kept in touch with the community over all these years. And in many ways, I've grown up and grown into being a rabbi here. And the community has grown with me into this wonderful community that now has a synagogue and is really sustaining itself. So I'm just visiting for these 2 weeks for the High Holy Days.
So I have a friend who recently converted to Judaism. If someone were interested in learning more about this faith, what would be the best next step? A person they could contact, a number they could call? Mm-hmm. What would you suggest for that person who would like to know more?
Well, they could call they could call any member of the Jewish community to get in contact with, you know, learning a little bit more about what it takes to become involved or to want to convert to Judaism. It's a long process, and it's a lot of study.
Many years, from what I understand. Does the Jewish community here have a website or a Facebook
page?
Right,
that's perfect. Yes, we do have Temple Sukkot Shalom. And there is a website.
I'll let you spell that.
SukkatShalom, Sukkat Shalom.
Okay.
Which means shelter of peace.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if anybody, there's folks out there that didn't know that there is services tonight at 7 o'clock at the temple. It's on Cordova Street. It's the old Children's Community Center for those.
So Cordova and I think Foster's the cross street?
Correct.
All right.
Mm-hmm. And then again tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. And then we have what's Tashlich, which Rabbi Zimmerman stated was our casting of sins at Gold Creek in Cope Park. And then next week for the Yom Kippur holiday, same time will be services on Friday night, the 13th, and Saturday morning, the 14th.
Sounds like a lot going on in this very important week of observances in the Jewish community. So thank you so much for joining us. And for folks who would like to know more about the Jewish community here in Juneau, they can look on Facebook at Temple Sukkat Shalom. That's SukkatShalom. Well, Happy New Year.
Thank you. Shana Tova. Happy New Year.
This is Bird Note. You may have heard us speak on Bird Note about important bird areas. We're describing especially productive habitat. In the United States, IBAs are designated by American Bird Conservancy and by National Audubon. Pete Pumphrey, president of Eastern Sierra Audubon, describes the power of such a designation for the management of Owens Lake in Eastern California.
When we did our bird count in April, it was a really blustery day. There were high winds blowing from the north. It really made it difficult for bird flight in a northerly direction. We were out there and a flight of about 800 leased sandpipers came in. They hit on an exposed part of the sandbar and they were just exhausted. They literally lay prostrate on the ground. Their wings were off to their sides and they were just obviously had gone as far as they could go. So to me, it just said, this place isn't just a nice place and it isn't just a good idea. It's absolutely vital to these birds and their population.
Ensuring adequate habitat for birds at Owens Lake is wedded to the issue of providing water for the city of Los Angeles. As competing needs get hashed out, the IBA designation gives birds standing in the negotiation, a place at the table. To find the important bird area nearest you, begin at birdnote.org.
Support for this program comes from Balloons by Night Moods, offering new and used Halloween costumes from infant to adult sizes. Balloons by Night Moods, located at 9342 Glacier Highway in the Valley. More info at 523-1099.
Tonight on 360 North, watch the BBC World News at 7 and Alaska Weather at 7:30. At 8, the PBS Nature Special Salmon Running the Gauntlet explores innovative paths to salmon recovery. At 9 o'clock, part documentary, part theater, Walden, The Ballad of Thoreau, explores our roles in caring for the earth. The Miller Center Forum follows at 10. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org. Find out more on Facebook and Twitter.
Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling, and with me is our producer, Jeff Brown. And I have the pleasure of handing him an arrest warrant, and we're going to learn a little bit more about that. Jeff, prepare to turn yourself in. With me also is Sonny Blackwell, and she's going to talk about the arrest warrant that I just handed to Jeff, and its role as part of the March of Dimes, Jail, and Bail event. Tell us about that.
How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you, Sonny. And are you part of the Moose Lodge? I know that they're organizing this.
Yes, the Moose Lodge is very active in the community when it comes to community events, and they also distribute or contribute quite a bit of money to the benefits of children and adults, and that's our goal, is to take care of our young and our elderly. So the Moose Lodge is very much active in community care, and that's where this event will be held.
Well, tell us how it's going to work. It's called March of Dimes, Jail and Bail. How does it operate, and if somebody gets handed an arrest warrant, what do they do?
Well, I'm actually the judge, and they call me the hanging judge, but it's always...
Judge Sonny.
Yes, it's always fun, and that's what we do. Our goal is to raise money. It's a fundraiser. So when you're handed an arrest warrant, like Jeff has been handed, his job is to post bail. Now, in order to post bail, he needs to go to his friends, and he can use extortion. He can use whatever he'd like. He can threaten, but just don't come empty-handed to court, which is what you do when you report after you get handed your warrant. And when you come, your goal is to raise money to help save babies who are born prematurely, to give the money to, the money is raised basically to contribute to the research for heart disease on babies, premature babies. They give support to mothers and infants that are born premature. I mean, it's very scary for a family that has a child that's in need, and especially something that's so small, someone that is so small. So these warrants are arrest warrants, and people are accused of being too caring for children, wanting to support the goal of providing care for them so that they can be healthy adults.
I see Jeff opening his wallet already here. He was probably accused of being too funny.
I don't think he understands. I'm the hanging judge. I don't think his wallet holds enough. So he's going to have to work on this or beg or borrow.
Well, I
can be bribed.
I think that that's an Andrew Jackson there. It might just be a start. Who came up with the idea? Is this something that happens at moose lodges across Alaska, or is this unique to our community?
No, this happens throughout Alaska. We're fortunate enough to have very generous donors here in Juneau, and Juneau has been one of the largest fundraising group of people, and when they show up, they usually show up with a couple hundred dollars that their friends have blamed them, or actually I've had people pay me a couple hundred dollars to keep their people in jail. So you can do whatever it takes to raise money, but the funds go to supporting the research, supporting babies that have been put in incubators, and families that have this challenge of brain disease and stuff. The March of Dimes have done wonderful things. They provide polio. They've helped eradicate.
They've been around since the 1940s.
Polio.
They have quite a tradition of helping youngsters who are born with disabilities or challenges of some sort. So tell me a little bit, Sonny, how does this jail thing work? You said you've had people come in and pay money to keep a friend in jail. Where's the jail, and do they get three squares a day?
Well, what happens is they show up at the Moose Lodge, and they check themselves in. There's a bailiff, and they come before me. I sentence them if they don't have enough to post bail. And while they're calling their colleagues to either have them keep them in jail or to bail them out or whatever it takes for them to raise the funds, there is bread and very, very tasty, watery
and
soup.
A chunk of coal.
Well, no, the coal comes after the fact that they're still there and they're going to be cold because we're going to turn the heat off and they're still waiting for people to pay for them to get out.
They really can't get out?
Well, no, they can get out, but don't tell everyone.
Oh, I see. Okay, so there are some exceptions.
Well, everyone that comes out of the generosity of their heart. They leave their work. They take leave, some of them. Some of them are rough and tough electricians. Matter of fact, we have Barry from Petco, who's the head of a store, who's going to be there. We have all sorts of individuals that come and donate their time. The act of bailing themselves out is they put forth the effort to bring money to this or their resources to this event and help us to accommodate what we need for our our chapter for what we want to do in this town. We set a goal of about $15,000, and last year we raised over $17,000, I do believe. And so if you're part of this community and you get a relative, loved one, someone at work you don't like so much, and you hear that they're being bailed or jailed, I encourage you to either help them out with a couple of dollars or a couple hundred if you want to keep them there.
So where would someone call to contribute, whether they're doing it to help someone get out or to help someone stay in? What's the hotline?
Well, the hotline for this event would be 209-1005, and that's the judge. And you might want to just kind of be careful as to how much you bribe me with.
Be thoughtful about that.
Yes.
So I didn't see on Jeff's arrest warrant if he has a specific court date and time. Is that how it works, or is it within whenever you can drop by the Moose Lodge, which, by the way, is on the access road, Old Dairy Road, on the way to the airport there? So how does that part work?
On your arrest warrant, it says September 15th, and I believe that the event starts at 11 o'clock and goes to 2, and you'll either get a phone call or you'll get a piece of paper. And I sentence you to how much money that I would like you to raise. And most people give it an excellent shot. And I've had some people come in with as much as $1,000 already on their ticket, and that's rare. And I was once a jail and bailer. I was in jail, and I knew how much work it was to do it, so I'd rather be the judge. I think that Jeff has just made his bail, though. What a generous man.
He is a generous man. And I noticed that on the warrant for his arrest, it also says that you can see baby Alex and how the money is used. And I think that's important for folks who contribute, because our community is incredibly generous. So folks can learn more about the March of Dimes at www.marchofdimes.com and then a / with where your money goes. And you can see a real person and how they're benefiting from this fundraising. So it sounds like this is an event per se. Did you say September 17th?
Yes.
Okay.
September 17th at High Noon.
You better be there, Sonny. Your name is on there, and your phone number is being publicized.
I have to be there at 11.
So if you get a warrant for your arrest, the best thing you can do is call your friends and families, family members and coworkers, and begin to raise money for the March of Dimes that would then be delivered at the time and place that shows on your warrant. But the event itself is occurring Saturday, September 17th at the Moose Lodge. It's a Tuesday. So folks can come on their lunch hour at noon.
It's an excellently fun event, and we have a motto, or at least this year's motto is, we're going to hang you high, because if you're sober, you fight too much.
I think I have to process that. Well, thanks to Sonny Blackwell from the Moose Lodge for joining us and talking about the March of Dimes jail and bail event. And whether or not you get an arrest warrant, you too can contribute on September 17th at noon out at the Moose Lodge. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, let's look at our weather. Tonight, mostly rain. The good news is that Thursday and Friday, it drops to a chance of rain and then picks up again on Saturday with rain likely. So it looks like a little bit of a break in the wet stuff. Thanks for joining us this afternoon on Juno Afternoon. This is my last Juno Afternoon for the summer. I've enjoyed it and appreciated Jeff's support as our producer. Tomorrow on Juno Afternoon, Shauna Strasser will host. We'll talk to musician Harrison B. about his current projects, Divas Erin Messing and Hannah Hoshida, I think is her last name. We'll highlight Saturday's Who's Your Diva fundraiser. We'll talk with M.K. McNaughton about her first Friday exhibit at the Alaska State Library. And as usual, Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. That, Writer's Almanac, Music and More, that's tomorrow at 3 o'clock. And remember, if you miss the Juno Afternoon or want to listen again, you can catch it and other local, statewide, and national, international news at KTOO.org. You are listening to KTOO.org. We brought broadcast at 104.3 FM downtown Juneau and Douglas, and on a variety of translators, K276 AF in the Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, Gustavus at K201 AM, K220 BT serves Huna in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. We are at K210 AF. And in Juneau, you can find us on GCI Cable, channel 871, 872, and 873. And as always, we're online, ktoo.org.
It's about to make 95% of us insured with access to affordable care. It has built-in incentives to lower costs and improve quality.
And Creedence Clearwater Revival's John Fogerty revives some old songs with new friends. First News.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. Some members of the House Foreign Affairs Committee say they are concerned about a military campaign against Syria and that it might spin out of control. NPR's Larry Abramson reports Congress is trying to fashion language that would keep U.S. involvement limited.
In the Senate, members have voted to expand an authorization to use military force in order to ensure that U.S. strikes can change the momentum in the Syrian civil war. But many House members want to keep the mission in Syria from expanding. Congressman Chris Smith...